What do you want to do when you grow up? I often hear grown-ups ask this question, usually to kids. And I can't help but think that many of the grown-ups who ask this question do so not so much because they're interested in the child's ambitions, but because they're looking for ideas themselves. As a seminarian, I'm often asked how I knew I wanted to be a priest, or why I want to become a priest. And I really dislike this question, not because I mind talking about my life or my own vocation story, but because I really don't have an answer that's satisfactory. You see, I didn't wake up one morning, look at a brochure, and say, long hours, low pay, no sex, where do I sign up? So for me, the answer to the question, why do you want to be a priest, is that I don't. What I want is to respond to God's call for me. And I believe that God has called me to priesthood. Now, this may seem like I'm playing a game with words here, but what I'm doing is describing the difference between a career and a vocation. You see, a career is something that we choose to do for any number of logical reasons. It could be a field that we're interested in, or it could be we enjoy the pay. A vocation doesn't work that way. A vocation is something completely different. Vocations don't answer the question, what do you want to do, but who is God calling you to be? That's a much tougher question to answer. But we're all called to answer that question because we're all called to something by God. The Christian spiritual journey is defined by how we experience and respond to God. This can often be a confusing path, but fortunately, today's readings can give us some help along the way. You see, today's readings provide us with three examples of what an authentic Christian vocation looks like. Our call to vocation begins, of course, with an encounter of the living God. This call is not something that we have control over. I'm always a little wary of people who claim to be seekers, because in my experience, these people who claim to be seekers tend to be seeking a God who fits their own definitions, a God who fits into their limited vision of who God is or what God should be. But God doesn't play that game with us, and that becomes very clear in today's readings. You see, God's not going to be mastered by our limited human ideas. A true encounter with God makes it clear that He is in charge, not us. Isaiah was sitting in the temple, probably a place he frequented, just as many of us frequent this church or any number of churches. And he was there praying, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts," a prayer that we too will pray in a few minutes. And there he was, sitting in the presence of God and in control, or so he thought. Suddenly the door shook and the room was filled with smoke, and Isaiah, quite rightly, was terrified. Now he was truly in the presence of God, and God, not Isaiah, was in control. Similarly, we hear about St. Paul, and he alludes to his encounter with God in today's second reading. Paul was a faithful Jew, and as a faithful Jew, he went about persecuting those rebel-rousers, the Christians, because he knew that God would not stand for their brand of blasphemy. Then all of a sudden, a flash of light, and Paul falls to the ground. And he realizes in his encounter with the living God that his puny brain hadn't come close to comprehending who God is. And then we have poor St. Peter, or Simon as he's known in today's readings. And here's a guy who's just come back from a long day of fishing. and a very unsuccessful day at that. And he comes to shore, and he's putting away his nets, when all of a sudden, Jesus, who is God, walks right onto his boat, completely uninvited, and says, "I want you to set offshore." Now imagine coming out of the office after a hard and grueling day at work, one of those unproductive days, and you walk out to your car in the parking lot, and you get in the car, and all of a sudden, a person who you barely know opens the door, sits in the passenger seat, and says, "I'd like you to drive over there." That's how little control Simon had when he encountered the Lord. My own experience was something similar. Some of you may know that I'm somewhat of a computer dork, and I also like business stuff. So you might think that I had it easy when I landed a well-paying job with a Fortune 500 company as a computer consultant. But when I was working that job, I realized that I was never happy. No, in fact, I was miserable. And I couldn't figure out what was going wrong. And then finally, I understood as it hit me. God was saying to me, "Brian, you're not in control here. You will not tell me who you are going to be. No, no, I'm in control, and I will tell you who you are going to be." And that makes sense. After all, in the scriptures, we hear Jesus say, "It was not you who chose me, but I who chose you." That's where I believe a call to a Christian vocation begins. It's not what I want, but when I see how God, the light, who is light itself, is shining upon me, calling me to my fullest potential. But this call doesn't end when that light shines on us. No, that's just the beginning. You see, to borrow an image from St. John of the Cross, when light shines upon a window, you can see all the imperfections in that window. And that's the same thing that happens with us. When that light of God shines upon us, suddenly our own sinfulness becomes more apparent. This happens in every story we heard today. Isaiah recognizes that he's in God's presence. And when that light shines upon him, his imperfections become seen. "Woe is me," he says. "I am doomed, for I am a man of unclean lips, living among a people of unclean lips." St. Paul's sinfulness was made known to him, to the extent that he actually says, "I am not worthy to be called an apostle." And then there's Simon Peter, who recognizes the awesome presence in which he stands and says, "Depart from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." Or me, who in the midst of spending a year working at a soup kitchen in Brooklyn, came to realize that I partake in the very systems that create a lot of the injustices that I was trying to fight. That I benefit from many privileges that put other people in poverty. That I partake in many systems of injustice that oppress other people throughout the world. When that light shines upon us, we become deeply aware of our own sinfulness. G.K. Chesterton says that a saint is a person who recognizes that they are a sinner. In other words, to be in the presence of God is to know with greater certainty that I am a sinner. This is why I'm often skeptical of people who claim to have had an experience of God, but then somehow gloss over their own sinfulness and their own imperfections. You know the type of people who say, "I know exactly what God wants, and this is what God wants all of you people to be doing." Because when we've truly encountered the living God, we don't become filled with ego, but with humility, because all of our imperfections are made clear to us as the light shines upon us. But we also learn that God can work with these imperfections. "Do not be afraid," he tells Simon. He tells Isaiah, "Your wickedness has been removed, your sin purged. You see, when that great light shines upon us, it doesn't expose our sinfulness for the world to condemn. No, that's not it. The light that shines upon us is a healing light. It's like a laser that can remove those varicose veins that mar our soul. I've experienced this many times in my own life. At times when I sit and think, how can I possibly preach this message? Or how can I continue in ministry given my own history of sinfulness? But then I realize that God is there to forgive me, that when I bring that sinfulness into the light, that I can be healed by that light, that that light doesn't take pleasure in condemning, but that light takes pleasure in healing. A lot of times we as Catholics are criticized because we're always talking about sin and confession. But we don't talk about sin so that we can be condemned. We talk about it so that we can freely bring our sin before the Lord to have our own sins healed, so that God can heal us. But our own healing, that doesn't complete our story of vocation. Because now we must ask the question, who am I going to be? You see, God doesn't simply heal us so that we can stand around basking in his glory. No, after cleansing us, he calls us to some sort of mission. After cleansing Isaiah of his wickedness, he says, I need somebody to spread the word to the nations. Who shall I send? Isaiah answers, here I am, send me. Paul, who's unworthy to be called an apostle, says that the grace of God has come upon me. And because that grace of God has come upon him, he's been called to preach to the Gentiles, and they believed. Peter, after hearing, do not be afraid, because I'm going to make you fishers of men, leaves everything behind at once to go and follow the Lord. You see, once we've been healed, God calls each one of us to a mission. And so for me, responding to the mission, that's why I want to become a priest. It's the response to a specific call for me, a specific call that began with my encounter with the living God. Now, all of you who have encountered the living God in sacrament and in word, if nothing else, must find out how are you being called specifically by God? Because God has a specific call for each and every person. So you must stop asking the question, what do I want to be when I grow up? And start asking the question, who is God calling me to be?